grace and faith were used on us, not by us.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
That was Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, December 1, 2017, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama. I much prefer saying studios than studios, but it's a lot harder to say now. I'm so used to saying we're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext. But right now from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is that
I have become indescribable.
Is that inimitable president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Mr. Williams. How are you? That stays in.
Hello, Donald. I was always wondering when the time would come when people would be at a total loss of words to introduce me or describe me, just at a loss. The time has come.
Yes, speechless in your presence I stand.
Yes, December the 1st, 2017, mark the day.
Naked stand I before the apostle.
Good morning, good evening.
Or if you're in some parts of the world, goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. Or in some situations.
How are things down there, buddy?
Everything is very fine. Very fine. We are having winter time. Oh, my goodness. Brrr.
80 degrees, 90 degrees?
It's down around 70. Goodness. Yeah.
Oh, the humanity.
Yes.
So, listen, something I just noticed about you. When did you lose your accent? Now, I speak to Sean Smith. I had Barry Laney and his lovely wife were across, and they actually set a Thanksgiving dinner out on our table for us, brought all the food and everything, and they don't fly anywhere. They fly.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't die down here. They die.
Yep.
And so how did you lose your accent?
Well, I still have some of it because it's charming, and so I want to keep some of the charm. But the part that's not charming, I got rid of. I like having enough Southern accent to where that people stop and smile and say, oh, I just love listening to you. And I got rid of the part that causes people to fall on the floor and laugh. So... Which happened to me, so I speak by experience.
I was walking around Sam's Club. I was feeding homeless people at the time, and I wanted a big old bag of rice. And my first time in Sam's Club, so I said to a lady who was serving up little tidbits to the shoppers, I said, "Where do I find the rice?" And she said, "The what?" And I said, "The rice. Where do I find it?" And she said, the what? This went on for maybe three or four times until she said, oh, the rice.
Rice.
And I'm going, the rice. Where do I find the rice? I love the Southern accent. I've always, but you know, when you say you lost the part that had people falling about themselves on the floor like brass monkeys, you probably don't realize how much people from overseas absolutely adore a Southern accent. I mean, an American accent's an American accent's an American accent. But Paula Deen, on the other hand, Now, that's some fancy talking right there.
I think my first trip to Michigan is where And it wasn't accent that I was wanting to get rid of. I realized it was enunciation that I needed to gain.
Okay.
So, no, I honestly, I went into a convenience store at a gas station to buy some gum. And I went in and I asked for a pack of gum. And there were two girls behind the counter. The girl that I asked for the pack of gum started laughing so hard she was silent. You know how if you're laughing.
She was just quivering.
Laughing really hard. She, you know, nothing comes out until you're able to get a breath. She didn't get the breath till she hit the floor. And that's after she hit the floor, she looked up at the other girl that was behind the counter and says, "Would you get this boy a pack of gum?"
Well, I think we'll dive into our email bag. We got a real mixed bag today, mate.
Mm-hmm.
A bit of this and a bit of that. We got something to satisfy everybody except the most undiscerning. Wayne Leese wrote us this week, and Wayne Leese said, "Hello, Don, I do hope you're doing well and not too overworked from your moving project." Thank you, Wayne. "I woke up thinking this today, to be free of religion is an impossibility. We just trade one for another when we get disillusioned." Well, we've seen that, and some people, Wayne, would say that switching to redemptionism is doing that. I'll get to that in a minute. Then two articles he says I read this morning also seemed to have this same theme, and he sent me the articles. One was on economics, but the one that really impacted me, I might read some from. He said, "I think I might have traded Christianity for the lottery." Yours, Wayne Leese. Now, I'm just going to open this one up and read a little bit of this to you because it speaks of tribalism.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like I say that I am firm. My wife says that I'm obstinate. I say that I am creative. My bank manager says that I'm wasteful. So, you know, it really, it depends on the angle from which we're looking at it, our perspective. But here is what this article said. Google Truth Algorithm. As you're aware, Facebook and Twitter and Google all use what is called an algorithm. It's if two of these plus four of those say seven of these, then that must be something that brings people together. And here it reads, Google's efforts to filter out positions which they think are fake news, like climate skeptic posts, have hit an unexpected snag. Google have just noticed large groups of people across the world hold views which differ from the views championed by the Silicon Valley monoculture. And then it quotes Eric Schmidt, who is the top dog on Google, or Alphabet as it calls itself now. "In the United States' current polarized political environment, the constant publishing of articles with vehemently opposing arguments has made it almost impossible for Google to rank information properly. Let's say that this group believes fact A and the other group believes fact B, and you passionately disagree with each other and you are all publishing and writing about it and so forth and so on. It is very difficult for us to understand truth," says Schmidt, referring to the search engine's algorithmic capabilities. "So when it gets to a contest of group A versus group B, and I'd like you to think, Michael, in terms of religion versus atheism or Christianity versus the gospel. If you can think in those terms when I'm reading this, I think you'll get the picture. You can imagine what I'm talking about. It is difficult for us to sort out which rank A or B is higher. In cases..." Now, the interesting thing here is, of course, that Google is attempting to rank truth by people's opinions. "In cases of greater consensus, when the search turns up a piece of incorrect or unreliable information, it is a problem that Google should be able to address by tweaking the algorithm," he says. "The problem comes when diametrically opposed viewpoints abound. The Google algorithm cannot identify which is misinformation and which is truth. That's the rub for the tech giant. Now there is a line we really cannot get across," says Schmidt. And he goes on to talk about the Facebook bubble and then finishes up with, that is a core problem of humans, that they tend to learn from each other and their friends who are like them. And so until we decide collectively that occasionally somebody not like you should be inserted into your database, which is sort of a social values thing, I think we're going to have this problem, the Alphabet or Google boss says. Now, there's more to this article, but I found this fascinating because what Google is saying is that when you have opposing points of view that are so opposing that it encourages much debate, their algorithms cannot pick what is true and what is not. Now, they talk about climate change, and as you know, climate change is a real hot potato at the moment and has its detractors and has its supporters. Now, we are not here to talk about climate change, but it's a very interesting illustration that they use, and here's what they say about it. To put it another way, in the case of climate skepticism, I suspect Google's problem is they have discovered there are lots of published mainstream peer-reviewed papers which support climate skeptics' positions. This is likely messing up their effort to classify climate skepticism as not being part of mainstream science. Now, that's science. You take it away from science and put it into the wheelhouse of religion, and I can only think that their problem becomes so much greater.
Definitely. Of course, this can only bring us back full circle to what is a search for truth. You can't let Google search for it. You can't let any search engine search for truth. The only thing that can truly seek the truth is your own heart. And your own heart can seek truth only when it is absent of seeking gain from that truth, nor is it seeking to approve what you already think is the truth. Now, I realize we're talking about a world that basically does not exist, but we do have some gospel revolutionaries that have this equipment in their tool belts. I'm brought to tears when I see things of opposing views, yet not having the need to completely demonize the person that you disagree with. One of the most beautiful relationships, we in the gospel revolution, we don't mind hearing other people's propositions of what they think is the truth. The difficult thing is finding someone who will and can sit and talk without getting heated, and certainly have passion about what we each think, but to leave out the condescension, to leave out that side's just evil. There's no good on that side. If you've got that view, you and all of them like you are evil, and the other side, you and all yours are all evil.
How to disagree without being disagreeable.
Yeah, and people say that, but it is rarely accomplished. That is for sure. You can hear it in a phone conversation. The moment that there's a, you have ruffled someone's feathers because you've said something that they disagree with. I was exactly the same way. I can't tell you that I'm completely free from all of that yet. The power of the gospel, number one, as we've already addressed, the issue of tribalism. I know of nothing that addresses and eliminates tribalism the way the gospel does.
When you know that you're one,
yep,
with a person with whom you seriously,
yes,
and severely disagree, you treat them differently.
You do.
I think it is a necessary component of finding truth.
It really is. And it's, I'm not even sure that it's the issue of finding truth. It's the process whereby we are seeking truth. My heart is in a constant state of pursuit. To do that, I have to be willing to question the things that I've already come to conclusions about in my own heart and my own mind. The difficulty, I think one of the difficulties that we have in the gospel revolution is that we already know the other side. You know, we were the other side. no one more difficult to be around than a former fill in the blank. And it almost as though that's where we hang our identity, is in what we are no longer. Now, I never was comfortable with conflict. So it has been imperative for me to find a place to where that I can have an opinion that is not the same as somebody else's, and vice versa, and not be in conflict, because I just detest the whole thing about conflict. Now, the only way that I have found to do that is to earnestly ask questions. I don't know how else to do it. When I disagree with someone, my whole disposition is not to begin to tell my story, to establish my position, but instead it is to, well, come on, all right, let's talk about this. And now this is what I attempt to do. I can't even tell you that I do it all the time, but I always get good results from this one position. Tell me the logic underlying your conclusions. Why do you think what you think is what I'm asking? So
yeah.
I truly am interested. It is so unappealing to me to see two people like Ram standing on the edge of a rock on the side of a mountain, taking full speed tilts at each other, and hearing the clatter and the collision of the two as they ram into each other. I'm not interested in that, and I don't participate in that. I'm not going to. And I think most people who know me know that I'm not going to do that.
If you are discussing the gospel with any kind of person who is dead set stuck in their ways, let's say, for example, they want to convince you there's a hell. Now, you've got a few options. You can just say, oh, that's interesting, mm-hmm. or say what Mike said. Can you please tell me the logic underlying your conclusions? Why do you think what you think? Now, the chances are that the more dyed-in-the-wool and bloody-minded these people are, the less they're liable to answer that question, because logic has nothing to do with faith. Logic has nothing to do with belief at all. That's why they call it faith, because there is no facts to support it. This modern faith I'm talking about. Yeah. I have faith my kids are going to grow up and be good citizens. That's just a fond hope. That's all it is. But logic is what religion is most afraid of.
Yeah.
And this tribal mentality can only be maintained as long as you are you stay in the fire. We used to say in the old days in Christianity, we used to tell people that if they didn't keep coming to church, they were like a coal. Once you remove it from the fire, it loses its heat and it's fire. Well, we had to say that because we wanted people to be like us. And there were people out there like Mike Williams who were saying, I don't want to be like you. And it was those people who attracted us to the gospel.
Now, Don, people may be wanting to stop and consider, have I embraced tribalism, whether I'm in the gospel revolution, a Pentecostal, or whatever I am.
Well, that's what Wayne also raises. You know, I think I've just traded the Christianity for the lottery.
Yes. Now, tribalism is part and parcel of our nature. As I have said for more than 20 years, I don't think people change. I think we change how we negotiate with ourselves and how we navigate with others. I'm still the same person that I remember to be when I was 5 years old. That's why sometimes I still act like I'm 5 years old. And I'm getting ready to go to Disney World with my kids, and my 3.5-year-old grandson will have a run for his money to keep up with the 5-year-old that grandpa is. But tribalism is a part of us. I'm not sure how much of it is learned. It's almost institutionalized in us. Family groupings can certainly convey tribalism. But if the only ones I have in my life are those that agree with me, I can say pretty sure that I am very tribal in my mentality. You see, that's where the problem on this planet is. It truly is in tribalism. One real good gospel revolution thing to do is get up and decide to change your mind about something. Decide to think of something in a different way. Just deliberately do it. Just get up and say, I abandon this view, and I'm going to think through this view. I'm going to see what I get out of that. Don't try to prove it wrong. Be your own best debate partner. And the other thing is when you get up, not only decide to think of something differently, change your mind about something, even if it's only for a few hours, change your mind about something today. And the other thing is stop and think, do I have people in my life as close as the people who agree with me? Do I have others that don't agree with me that are just as close? Man, I tell you, that'll go a long way to a healthy mentality for yourself. I think it's a test for the gospel and its durability in the heart and the mind, in the fact that, as Don has already told you, it's very difficult to maintain tribalism when you see yourself as equals and as one. It's one thing to see yourself as equal. That's great. But honey, when you see yourself as one and the same thing, you're just one unit. If that doesn't bring down tribalism, nothing will. It really does.
Lots of nasty stuff just melts away. Thank you, Wayne. Thanks very much for getting us started today. Appreciate that. This week we heard from Doug Salonen, and he said, Mike and Don, I used to teach a new believers class that I taught about the very verse on the podcast, not laying again the foundation, yada, yada, yada.
My, my.
I feel kind of bad for what I taught. I can't even remember what I could have been teaching when I read the verses now. Mm. I definitely pull those out of context. This was a class that was taught at our church. It was Word of Faith. My uncle, the pastor, went to a known Bible school in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. I think we know what that one is, don't we?
Yeah.
We have another I'll play you a little bit by another one of our precious gospel revolutionaries who also went to that known Bible school in Broken Arrow. I can hardly believe the verses we pulled out of context. Whatever subject I was teaching on, I went to the Strongs and pulled out all the verses that were there. Doug Salonen. P.S. Don, you can use my name on the podcast. You didn't want to say it when I asked about the books Paul wrote, which you discussed on the podcast. No, I didn't want to because I just didn't have your permission. And family, if you don't want us to use your name when you email us, just tell us. Yeah. And if you want us particularly to use your name, let us know that too.
In fact, you almost have to tell us you want us to, for us to. Our default is that we, unless you specify that it's okay, unless the letter is saying, somehow the letter is saying that this is a public and open letter, we're not going to be telling your names. Now, there again, it's odd that we would have to do that. But folks, there's people whose livelihoods, their families are at stake if word gets out that they think differently now than what they used to think.
They'll be booted out on their bums.
Exactly.
I've seen this happen and I've heard of it happening in multiple situations. where the pastor is finds all of his furniture out on the front street. I mean,
yeah.
Talk about love. Now, that's love for you. Now, have a listen. Doug, I thought that you might be interested in hearing our esteemed friend, Michael Bond. Here's Michael Bond.
Did you marry another Pharisee like yourself?
Actually, Lynn, prior to our meeting, she was probably a clubber.
A clubber.
She, a clubber.
That now a Pharisee is a step up or three or four steps up, right?
I understand. She became a Pharisee after she met me.
Oh mate, you had what it took, didn't you, to turn her into a Pharisee? Okay, what happened then?
We actually met at a Bible study. It was the Word of Faith Bible study. And as I tell people, we were Sister Lynn and Brother Mike. So we would go out after the meetings. We'd go to Shoney's and she'd just be very expressive and say, you know, I know the Lord's got the right man for me. I said, yeah, baby, you know that's right, because I'm sitting right across the table from you. So we had the genius idea, Maris. We had the genius idea of studying the scripture in her bedroom back at her house.
I have to, that's as good a place to study scripture as I know.
Yeah, I tell you what, best place I know. And so I had the revelation. I said, you know what? Now I was kind of dense for 2 or 3 weeks, but I finally woke up one day and I said, you know what? I need to study her. Quit studying this Bible. So we closed the Bible up and I started studying her, and the rest is history.
Oh, my. That is. What do you like to be called? Michael?
Michael. Mr. Bond. No, you call me Michael.
Okay, I'll try to remember that, because there's somebody. So many Mikes, mate. Do you mind if I call you Mike to save the confusion?
You can, yes, sir. You can do that. It's fine,
Michael. So you, you introduced this girl to the school of the Pharisees. What happened then?
After we got married, we finally decided that we wanted to go and get involved in the ministry, because I was working in General Motors at the time. And so we packed up everything we had, which wasn't much, and drove to Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, where Mecca was, we thought at the time.
Why was that Mecca?
Well, we just believed if we could get our mouth in line with God's word, we could change things. And we wanted to desperately to change our lives.
But sure, but why Broken Arrow? Why was that a Mecca?
Why was that a Mecca? Well, we were listening to Copeland on the radio. We were listening to Hagen. We call it Copenhagen back in the day. that's a way old term. But anyway, we were looking for help, Barris. We wanted help any way we could find it, because we determined that the religions that we came out of prior to the other religion we were heading into wasn't helping us to the extent that we wanted help. And that's why we made the decision to do it.
Who was in Broken Arrow that attracted you there?
Well, it's Kenneth Hagin Ministries predominantly.
Oh, okay.
It was just a general call to go get educated about the scripture, which I found out later we didn't know what the scripture was. And, of course, Michael has taught us all what the scripture really is, and it brought validation to the commentary in the New Covenant now. You know, Michael's wearing a T-shirt that says no experience necessary. Hey, buddy, I qualify. Let's go. I qualify big time. I can handle that.
So you went to Broken Arrow and
yes.
What to go to Hagen's church, was it, or his college?
No, to school.
Oh,
to
okay.
The school. That was the whole purpose, was to go to school. It's called Rhema Bible Training Center. It was just a general school of theology, study of God.
How long was the course you went through?
Well, we went 1 year, and we were so tormented by the first year, we decided to go for a second. We were a little slow on the uptake, Barris, just to be honest with you. And so we, you know, in the process of all that, we had our home was burnt down to the ground when we went between the first and second year. And I thought, well, shoot. So then we moved down the street about three or four houses to get ready for the second year. Then what we saved out of the house the first time, we put in this other home, and we rented it as well. Then we were at a meeting one day, and the thieves come and got the rest of it. Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine.
Now, how did, Family, I got to tell you, I think I'm, for the first time in the Gospel Revolution, I think I'm dealing with someone who's actually a comedian and doesn't even realize that they are. It's the funniest thing. I wish you could see this guy's face across from me. Half the time he's deadly serious and half the, well, anyway, you're just going to have to figure out which half is half.
On both counts here, for Doug and also for Mike, this is a small part of the impact that we've had in the Word of Faith movement. I was a part of it. And I also was a guest speaker at this school in Rhema Bible Training Center in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Boy, did it stir a ruckus. If you want to know a point in the time of the history of the Gospel Revolution, this series that I taught there at Broken Arrow sent everything into a tailspin. It was amazing. We had Kenneth Copeland Board of Director members there. The man who started Kenneth Hagin Ministries, or says that he started Kenneth Copeland in the ministry, the very same man came to me. He told me that all of the Word of Faith guys, he says that he put them on the map. And he came to me and wanted to meet with me, and he said, "I'm going to do the same with you." And he told me, "You are going to surpass what any of these men have done, because you've got a talent, you've got an ability that the rest of them do not have." And I met with him at his home.
What was that, mate? The ability to talk a lot, or what?
I have no clue what he meant.
Might have been the altar calls.
I don't have a clue what he meant. But
Listen, if someone told me I was really talented, I'd want to know exactly what about.
I don't ask questions, Don.
Oh, I think your pants are smoking. I so think your pants are smoking.
They so are not. I have no idea what the man meant.
So is that how you got your start? You know, he put you on the map.
No, things progressed a little bit more. I said a little bit more, and he started backing away a little bit more. So, but that meeting, goodness gracious, was a breakthrough for a lot of people.
What part of the evolution of your understanding of the gospel of grace or the gospel of peace were you?
I was teaching specifically on grace. In fact, it was called Grace, God's Ability. Jim Richards later named his book after that. And
good old Jim, hey, hey, why create another, something another when you can steal it?
Another title he quote came up with, and now there's a lot about that teaching about grace, God's ability, that I would not stand beside today. However, for a bunch of Word of Faith people who were drowning in legalism, for somebody to stand up and say it's not by your faith, it is by the grace of God. It is faith, but it's grace that makes your faith operate.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, wow, what a it was a transformative moment.
In fact, a lot of what we're discussing today is going to lead up to our main topic, but I'll just tease it like that. You're going to enjoy this. You've heard it before, but you're going to enjoy a little bit of a new twist that Brother Michael is going to bring to it in today's revelations.
And also I want to say to Doug, boy, I know that feeling. I know that feeling of when finally a section of text comes to life to you, whether you've learned it on your own or through somebody else, and you realize that you've taught this in another way. And I really relate also to what he's saying. I can't even imagine now what it is I did teach on it. Just can't remember. Now, I think that's a good thing, that you just can't remember the way you used to teach. But
what a wonderful place of rest that is.
What a wonderful place. These are the things that Paul said that he had chosen to leave behind. Doug, if Paul taught it all, and if Paul left it all behind, you can too.
Thank you very much, Doug, and thank you for letting us use your name.
Love's calling you. Love's calling you. I hear the songbird sing his song for you. For love's been gone far too long. It's journey takes you far beyond your dreams. Within your soul, your heart's desire, love's calling.
Now, Michael, you sent me an email earlier today, and...
Yes, I did.
So, it reads, Evangelicals. Now, this was part of the Pew Research, which is a group that does surveys. Evangelicals are America's most powerful religious affiliation. With such a prominent group influencing U.S. politics in 24/7... Wall Street found the share of each state's population who identify as evangelical with data from public policy think tank Pew Research Center. While there are many different evangelical sects, they are unified by certain core beliefs. Central to evangelicalism is the belief that only conversion or a personal born-again experience leads to salvation. The emphasis is also on spreading the word of God or evangelizing through one-on-one sessions or organized missions. Compared with other high-income nations, the U.S. stands out as exceptionally religious. Of the 70.6% of Americans who consider themselves Christian, evangelicalism has consistently been the most popular denomination. In fact, at least one quarter of the population in nearly 30 states is affiliated with the evangelical faith. The global pattern of low religious affiliation in high-income nations can also be observed amongst states. The median household income exceeds the median in only four of the 25 states, with the higher shares of people identifying as evangelicals. The opposite is true among the states with relatively low shares of evangelicals. What that is saying is that the lower the income, the higher the percentage of evangelicals. As a whole, evangelicalism has shrunk in the United States, while still accounting for 25% of all U.S. Religious affiliation. The share of evangelicals has decreased a whole percentage point in just 7 years. Mm-hmm. Now, before I came to America, Americans were voting with their feet to the tune of 2 million people a year leaving the church. And this is what this is saying is it's not getting any better. It's getting faster, if anything. Mm-hmm. Notably, the largest decline occurred in the evangelical stronghold region of the South, where self-identified evangelicals dropped from 37% to 34% of the population between 2007 and 2014. Meanwhile, the religious affiliation that has flourished the most during this period is no religion at all. The No Association group, which comprised 16% of the population in 2007, today comprises 23% of the population. And get this, here's the kicker. The No Association group is the second largest belief system in the United States. Well, I mean, whoever wrote this, I guess what they're saying is that evangelicals are still number one, losing the lead to the second largest group, which are No Association.
Yeah, who the used-to-bes is who they're losing this to. These are people who used to have the very foundation of their belief system rooted in a personal Lord, personal Savior, personal born-again experience that had to be evangelized. Now, in the South, there's been a group that's been growing, and that is that a group that no longer fits in that category. If you want to get excited about some numbers, some statistics here, This is a place for the gospel revolution to get excited. This number of people from 2007 until 2014, of those that no longer associate with the personal Lord, personal Savior, personal born-again experience, they have changed their minds. from a group of 16% that have no association with that, to where now there is 23% in this period of time, from 2007 to 2014, it is now up to 23%, and now is the second largest belief system, as they put it here in this article, in the United States. Do you wonder, are we making any inroads, any impact? Now, folks, I cannot tell you what part of this increase in this number of 16% to 23% of people who no longer affiliate. We just read you letters from two of them. You got a letter from one. You also got an interview with another one, both of them from the same Bible schools who espouse these evangelical points. They are part of that growth of 16% to 23%. Now, Don, what year was it that you first would say that you departed from the association with this personal group of personal salvation, personal Lord, born again, got to make Jesus your personal Lord and Savior group, to the no association with that? How long ago has that been?
I'd say around 2011.
About 2011. So there's another one. There's three in that group right there that we have talked to and read the read the emails from. So are we a part of that percentage of increase? Yes, 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 yes. We are a part of that. What part? I don't know. Somebody else will have to do a research to figure out exactly what percentage of that is Gospel Revolution inspired. But make no mistake, folks, we are a part of the largest growing group in America of their perceptions moving away from Christianity.
Then you sent me another email, and it reads like this. There are only two ways to live your life. You know, family, you hear us saying a lot about you are God in the earth. And sometimes some of you ask us what we mean by that. What we mean by that is God ain't working in the earth except through you.
Mm-hmm.
You are his arms and legs in the earth.
Yeah.
If you see somebody starving to death, don't pray for them. My God.
Yeah.
Why the hell would you pray for them? No. Go give them some food.
Yeah.
See, you're God in the earth. You're the answer to their prayers.
Mm-hmm.
So it says in this article, there are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
But without deeper reflection, one knows from daily life that one exists for other people. First of all, for those upon whose smiles and well-being our own happiness is wholly dependent. And then for the many unknown to us, to whose destinies we are bound by the ties of sympathy. Well written stuff, isn't it?
Oh, I love it.
Particularly well written, seeing that this person did not have English as a first language.
Mm-hmm.
100 times every day I remind myself that my inner and outer life are based on the labors of others.
Mm.
My inner and outer life.
Goodness gracious. I love this.
Are based on the labors of other men, living and dead.
Mm.
And that I must exert myself in order to give in the same measure as I have received and am still receiving. A human being is part of a whole, called by us the universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. What a great way with words. This delusion is a kind of a prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest us.
Yeah.
Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison.
Yeah.
By the way, I'd say it's a prison restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons who actually agree with us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circles of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. Only a life lived for others is worth living.
Mm.
Albert Einstein.
My goodness. I ran across this quite by accident, and I knew that we had to use this. I tell you, this is something that you could wake up every day and read this before you ever roll out from under the covers while you're making your decision to change your mind about something, and to change your opinion about something, and while you're making a decision to include somebody in your life that you don't agree with. This could be. I can come up with all kinds of good tasks for you if you want. If you want something to do, here it is. This would not be a bad thing to read every day of your life. I don't know of anything written that has, in our modern time, described our interdependency upon each other. To realize that you don't live a life unto yourself. Your inner life and your external life are both lived out because of the efforts and the deeds of others, not just your decisions. Your decisions are very influenced by the decisions that have made of people that have gone before you. Man, I tell you what, this appreciation is something that we all need. I've said for many years that a life, a fulfilled life, needs two things and two things only, and that is purpose and passion. Passion for me is the things that I do that fulfill my life, that particularly make me a very happy person by having these things in my life. But you can consume yourself upon yourself all you want. It's not going to lead to being a happy person. But purpose is that which I do for others that does not necessarily benefit me at all.
I was talking with somebody yesterday about this thing. And we were talking about how best to use our time, mm-hmm. and I was making the point that we have talents and we have passions.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily work together.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of people whose passion was to become a fireman when they grew up, or become a nurse, or their passion was to become a rocket scientist. But by the time you're 30, you realize that ain't going to happen. Mm-hmm. So sometimes your passions give way to reality.
Yeah.
But your talents are your talents are your talents. Mm-hmm. No one can take those off you. They're as good as the five senses of smell, touch, taste, and so forth. Now, I was saying to this person, it was Sean Smith, don't let your passions dictate what you do. Let your talents decide which of your passions
mm-hmm.
are going to be the most profitable to pursue in whatever way that you see profit,
mm-hmm.
whether it's personal or financial or any other way. Does that fit in with what you're saying?
You know, if there's not at least 100 ways to say something, it's not worth being said in the first place. So,
well, just another accent, of course, helps, you know.
Exactly.
Any time that we can make it more understandable than a southern accent.
If you can't say it one way, say it another.
Say it another way. Just get her done. Oh, boy, we how did we get there?
That's email right. I
yeah, we're
you.
An Albert Einstein. Sorry?
It was an email that I sent you.
It was. This is well, there's not a lot of things up on my walls, but this is worth being up on my wall.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Definitely. I love it.
And that is being God in the earth. Now, I know that Arguments Rage was Albert Einstein a God believer. Was he not a God believer? Atheists love to hug him to their breasts, and so do Christians. Look, just listen. Only a life lived for others is worth living. God in the earth.
Exactly.
Now, it doesn't matter what his words were. It doesn't matter how he chose to express himself. The fact of the matter is, you and I are God in the earth, and I think this is a mantra. It's going up on my wall, Michael.
Yeah.
Hi, I am Marcel Roos, coming to you from Bouchen in Holland, where I maintain the Gospel Revolution radio service. If you need a fast injection of the Gospel CPR, that is the consistent, persistent, and repetitive joy of the Gospel, then tune in to the Gospel Revolution radio, playing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. To listen, go to gospelrevolution.com. And under audio, at the top of the page, simply click on GR Radio 24/7.
Now, Mike, in feedback from our past shows, we heard from Rob, and he's referencing something I said on a podcast. Better have a goat handy. I can't wait to say that to someone. Resurrection of the dead is past tense. I've read that many times, never sunk in because I was never taught the gospel in church. Yeah, Rob, I understand it. Oh, my, do I understand that.
Oh, we wow. Only... Is this another one that has added to this 23% growth?
Oh, no. That's it has to be 24 by now.
It's growing as we speak.
Gina said, is that Gina Lollobrigida?
Of course.
Who else? That's she said, I think, oh, we have some stars, even dead stars. It's Gina Lollobrigida. In the Gospel Revolution. I think God started having a human experience when he chose to make his abode in us and we became one. Oh, Gina. So then the question is, Gina, when did he choose to make his abode in us? We'll answer that in a minute. This is when man started having a divine experience.
Don't get us started.
Yeah, and it takes so little to get us started. We're just five-year-olds, you know, remember? To me, and that's when humanity started having a divine experience. To me, that just makes sense. Yeah. How could God have had a human experience when God and man were separated? Maybe in the world to come, we will have only a divine experience. Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. Gina. And it doesn't say it, but I think it's Gina Lollobrigida. Am I showing my age? next I'll be trotting out Zaza Gabor. Yeah. Hey,
talk about Googling. Are people going to be Googling these names to figure out who the world they are?
Yeah, that's L-O-L-L-A. All right. So when, Gina, did God choose to make his abode in us? Because if God started having a human experience when he chose to make his abode in us, when did he do that?
I think that this is the arena for a lot of learning right now. It is for me. I see God having a human experience even in the Old Testament when I read things like anger and wrath and those things. Now, I can't qualify that at all. I'm just telling you that it's an arena of what that my mind is wandering around in. Also, I want to address the statement of being separated from God. I know it may sound like we're dealing with semantics, but man was never easy for you to say.
Yeah, that's all, folks.
Man was never separated from God, but man was separate from God.
They were two separate entities.
They were two separate entities. When we say man was separated from God, it is an agreement with evangelicalism that says that the experience in the garden brought a schism between the two.
Mm.
And we do not, we don't see that ever happening. We don't, we just don't see that happening.
What happens is in Christianity, because it depends, you know, one block depends on another block, depends on another block. If you've got hell, that's good. If you've got eternity, that's good. You can build on these blocks and you can build to manipulate people. But when it comes to what most people, what Michael's talking about, theologically it's called the fall, it just doesn't happen.
No.
Just there is nothing in the Bible anywhere to say that that is no. And then we build out of that, well, sin separated man from God.
Yeah.
Well, if that's true, why did he take Enoch off the face of the earth? Why did he take Elijah up in a whirlwind? Are we saying that these guys didn't have sin in their life? That just doesn't make – no. No, that separation I think is a myth, isn't it, Michael?
Yeah, the becoming separated, separateness was something that we had to realize. I think that's one of the reasons that God gave the law, is to make us aware that we are true. We at one time were separate from God in the fact that we were two separate entities.
That's good. Hmm.
Not that the a problem erupted and he went his way and we went ours. That we don't find. In fact, the account in Genesis would refute that 100%.
In fact, it was two separate entities in a master-servant
yes.
relationship or a master-slave relationship.
Yes, and our father-son relationship.
Yes, or a greater and a lesser. Yes.
Yeah, it's like I said, if it's worth saying, it, you could say it 100 different ways, and we could say this one 100 different ways also. But the reality of this point in time when the original creation ceased to be. Now, the original creation was God created man in his own image. So separate from, so God did not separate himself from man, or was man separated from God because of any action or deed. This was established by creation itself. Now, I have many friends, very close friends, who say, well, Mike, I disagree with you on this. I don't think man was ever separated from God. And I agree with them. But there is a mindset that because religion has used that term so much, we reject it altogether. But separate and separated are two different things. Separated is an act that that caused a division, and separate is just that. It's just not the same. And what God did in Christ was he ended the separateness. He didn't say, oh, well, now, oh, man, now we can go back to the way we were. And see, that is also one of the main hamstrings of Christianity, is that they believe that the cross was effective in bringing man back to the garden, if you will, bringing man back to the way things were before, quote, the separation occurred. Now, that's just wrong. It's not in the Bible. It's not there. It's not teachable. It is just something that a construct of illogical thought that's held together with spit and paper is about all it is, and the spit comes from the preacher. And
why would you want to go back to some place where all the bloody hell started?
Why do you want to go back to being corruptible? That's the other thing that Christianity does not get. You are not corruptible. I got a text from the guy who worked for me. Now, a lot of people want to know about my relationships and friendships, and are they endearing? Do they last? The people that's in my life, you know, long ago, are they still there? Well, let me tell you, I had a conversation with a friend of mine that I met when I was 12 years old. We have been friends since then.
Mm.
I also got a text from a guy who is in his 50s now, early 50s, I believe. And he used to work for me, and he started to work for me and worked for me for 4 years when he was 23 years old. So I get a text from this guy. Now, this guy put up with the best of me, the worst of me. It was the worst of times. It was the best of times. And now I'm so grateful that I can joke with him about what a horrible creature I was. I mean, I was taught how to be what I was as a minister by people like Kenneth Copeland, Kenneth Hagin, Norval Hayes, and the obedience that I felt I was doing him a godly favor by being demanding and inflexible on every issue. I remember one time, I got to tell you a story. It always leads to a story. We were staying at the Marriott somewhere in the Midwest, and it had an indoor-outdoor pool where you could swim under the glass. And we were staying inside because it was a bit chilly outside. And it was during the daytime after everybody else because my schedule was to be ready to go in to teach at 7 o'clock in the evening. So I had the earlier part of the day to study, to lounge, to go eat, whatever I wanted to do. So this was my assistant traveling with me. So I told him, I said, Phil, go get us 2 buckets of ice. I don't remember why I thought we needed 2 buckets of ice, but Phil left and stayed gone for longer than I thought they should have taken to get 2 buckets of ice, and he came back with 1. And when he showed up with 1, I'm telling you what, and I'll use my terminology that we used back then, my righteous indignation rose up in me. And I looked at him right straight in the face as he handed me a single bucket of ice, and I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Well," he said, "I couldn't find none of the maids were out, and so I had to get just the bucket from our room to get ice." I said, "What did I tell you to do?" I said, "I can hear your excuses. Now, what did I tell you to do?" And he said, "You told me to go get 2 buckets of ice." And I said, "Now, I said, I want you to turn around and leave and don't come back here until you have 2 buckets of ice." That's what he had to live with.
Well, see.
But I was training him.
You can't. Of course you were.
I was training him. Soft. I told him, your faith is never going to work for you. If you can't take an order from me and do it right, how can you take an order from God and do it right?
Oh, man. Well said, Michael.
Slam dunk.
Yeah. It just is that clear, obvious.
Now, some people who know me only through the Gospel Revolution
are
mortified by the fact that I said such a thing, but yeah, I did.
But what all's this got to do with the pool?
Well, it has to do with I also had a very nice lifestyle.
Oh, you wanted to say how well off you were. Yeah, okay. I hear you.
We were doing well. We were doing well. And but I got a text from this same guy now. So this very same fella I just got a text from, and here is the text that I received from Phil. And he said, "I feel," now this is just out of nowhere. I hadn't gotten a text from him in days and talked to him in weeks. So I get this text. It says, "I feel as though I am incorruptible." This was my response. "It's more than a feeling, my friend. seed of the first Adam was corruptible. How anyone could say the seed of the last Adam is anything but incorruptible has to have religious blinders on. His reply, yes, I understand that I am incorruptible. I'm telling you, I feel.
Big difference.
Like I'm incorruptible.
Wow.
It is wonderful when feelings match reality, was my response. His response then was, the gospel is life. Wow. This is
how precious.
This is from 25 years ago. I said, it is indeed. He said to me, thank you for teaching me the gospel. I said back to him, I think we found it together. This month I have two pastors transitioning out of ministry into promoting the gospel. And I told him about the two and the them being ostracized, and the prophecies that were, coming down, you know, on their heads, and,
prophecies of doom.
Yes, prophecies of doom coming down upon them. And I my last comment to him, I said, and you, my friend, are a part of my heart and the history of this great revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yes, I am.
I saw no eyes.
Yes, I.
Jeez,
am.
Jeez, you're a meanie. Jeez. And you know, you know the worst about you being a meanie?
I'm so sweet.
Is he? No, I don't think. I mean, the worst thing about you being a meanie is you use the Bible.
Oh God! Yes.
To bloody cover your butt and to you're a meanie.
you have to unlearn that technique, believe me. Now, I wanted to share that for a couple of reasons. One, I wanted Doug to know I was there too. I could just, my heart hurt when I read Doug's email of knowing what he said and what he's done. But I wanted Doug to know that, you know, buddy, I can take your stories of the things you've said and done. I am sure I can top them. And if not, they would be equal to anything that you've said or done in a way that was not anything to do with truth. We're all pursuing. We're all looking. We're all growing.
Doug, thank you so much for that letter and that honesty. Some of us, it takes us a while to be honest about our past.
Well, it does.
I was talking with somebody just a couple of days ago, and I was telling this person the difficulties that I had in writing Roman style, trying to have a foot in each camp, trying to placate my Christian friends and pursue the gospel.
Yeah.
And I just had to come to the conclusion you can't do both.
Mm.
And I've got friends who've been my friends for 60 years, for crying out loud, from babyhood almost.
Yeah.
And I don't want to – it's not a selfish thing. I want to enhance our relationship. I don't want to harm it. And if there's any chance that going in a different direction will harm it, you know, I just have a natural built-in inclination not to do that. But I've come to the conclusion in the end, I have to, like Paul said, this one thing I do, leaving behind something and then pushing ahead to something else. He didn't say these many things I dabble in. So I came to the conclusion eventually that I had a decision to make.
Yeah. And the nice thing is you don't have to push them off. It's just like with my friend I was telling you about. I met him when I was 12 years old. And we have a long history as friends. And but he is about as spiritual as wallpaper. And
and he said, I feel incorrupt. Wow.
And no, this is the other. That was the other guy.
Oh, okay.
No, believe me, Phil is a very spiritual inclination. Has a very strong spiritual inclination to him. This is the other one that I've known since I was 12. He has none at all. We just don't talk about it.
Well,
we just don't talk about it at all.
It just doesn't come up. Doesn't have to come up.
No.
Yeah. And sometimes when you make a decision to strike out on your own, some of those people, some of those frenemies will identify themselves as such.
Yeah.
And you won't have to get rid of them. They'll get rid of themselves.
Yeah.
Suddenly you're too low quality for them to hang around with anymore. Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, thank you, Doug Salonen, for that and for letting us use your name. Appreciate that.
The older you get, the more your brain cells get filled up with garbage, and it's hard to dump those things. I've tried to do one of those dumps where you just go and plug in somewhere and just let all the old crap out and make room for the new. It just doesn't work that way. You got to override it somehow, and I'm working on that.
Now, up on the website, Michael, what I did this week was I put the PowerCast front and center on the front page.
Good.
So you don't even have to drill down. Now you can go over to the side where it says podcasts and click on there. That'll take you straight to the whole page of podcasts from here to eternity. You can go up to the top and under resources, you'll notice that we changed the menus up there a little bit. One of the GRs said to me, you know, would this work better? And I said, let's go for it. So under resources, go for audio, and you'll find, the PowerCasts in there. So you got several ways of getting there, but I just wanted you to be able to go, particularly if you're listening to us on a mobile device, I wanted you to be able to go to the front page and download anything and everything which is current and in our opinion worth listening to. So the PowerCasts are now on the front page. Last week I put the whole blurb up there with them, but this week I'll probably just put I'll put less so that it takes up less room.
Gospel Revolution.
From the friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution, which is a Facebook group, Sean Smith wrote a fairly lengthy letter. I'm not going to read it all, but I'll read enough of it for you to get the feel for it. Dear Michael and Don, the Gospel Revolution is symbolic of my freedom from all the shoveling of BS I've had to do in my life. Let me explain. Most folks are familiar with the initials BS. I've given BS an additional meaning, bankrupt spirituality. Mm. BS fits swimmingly with my persona as Slung Dung because of the typical meaning of BS, my southern slang and the slinging of bankrupt spirituality out of my life. I appeal to both meanings whenever I use BS. Why? I found my life was a cesspool of varying BS ingredients, greatest of which was my fear of loss and hope of gain. Yes, Sean, they are the two. If you want to know what the two most basic motivators of any human being is, it's those two things, fear of loss and hope of gain. You're sitting
number one drivers behind religion, too.
Say that again, mate.
The number one driving forces between of religion, too.
Absolute. That's why in John chapter 14, God only gets an abode, but we get a mansion. But if we don't do the right thing, we'll get hell, eternal conscious torment. And in that simple picture, you have the fear of loss and hope of gain. Add a heaping help, he says, of obligation and bunches of should and the vile smell of guilt and shame oozing from my life. Plus, I'm naturally full of BS, just ask my friends. Well, I happen to be your friend, my friend, and you're full of it. You are full of it. I ain't the quintessential human being, but I know quintessential good news when I hear it. I let myself fall into its goodness. I was kidding. Please don't go and put your head in the oven there, Sean. I was just kidding. It was a joke. I let myself fall into its goodness. I've dug my way out of BS and I'm getting a good hot shower in the gospel. My body may not smell like roses all the time, but my heart smells constantly like gardenias, a freeing smell that proclaims my soul is freed from BS. I know in my gardenia-smelling heart that you will love the gospel the way I do. Please consider getting rid of those things in your life that you know is BS. The Gospel Revolution is the best place to start. What are you waiting for? Tune in already. The Gospel Revolution. There is no substitute. Sean Smith, Doctor of Crapology, the fastest dung slinger in the South. Ah, Sean, always good to hear from you, friend.
For sure. Yeah, good instructions. Goodness gracious, you want some instructions? Heed Sean's advice.
Now, I want to raise something which we have put off because we had a pledge drive, and that is my friend Charles Saini in Malawi. Now, this man has a need for Bibles, and the only way we can get the scriptures into his hands and into the hands of the pastors in that area is to give them Bibles. Now, do you want to do this now?
It's fine.
Okay. I was speaking with Mel Martin, and Mel Martin, I was talking about how we could raise enough money. They want $10 a Bible to get them into Malawi. It doesn't matter whether we buy them here, whether we buy them there, it's still going to cost us $10 a Bible. And Mel said to me, wouldn't it be good if we could have the Gospel Revolution and www.gospelrevolution.com, you know, happily donated by. And I said, what a hot idea. Even if we just get a stamp and stamp the inside of the page where the index is, that'd be nice. But we're looking at trying to do that. But the problem is that we've had no takers. It's going to cost us to get 50 Bibles in there, $500. And I said to Mel, you know, Mel, I'd stick my hand in my own pocket for this one. This is a little group over there who's listening to the gospel. I don't know what they make of it, but they would call themselves mainline Christians at the moment. And I want to get them Bibles so that we can start talking about scriptures. And I get the a really small version of the podcast and I send it to Charles. And they all gather around one little phone and listen to the gospel. So I said to Mel, you know, I'd throw my hand in my pocket for $100 towards this. And he said, well, I'd do the same. So there's $200. Family, if you can, and unless I can get these 50 Bibles, and you might say, well, why don't you start with 10? No, I want to start with 50 because that's how many people he's got that he needs to, that he's teaching and sharing with. That's how many people he's got that he's sharing with. I don't know if these people are going to become bona fide gospel revolutionaries, but I know they need the gospel. I absolutely know that if they're in Christianity, they need it even more. So my target is to get 50 Bibles over there, $10 a throw. We're going to see about putting our own name on the front. I mean, it'd cost us probably $1 a book to put our own name on front. So if we get, say, 6 people with $50 a piece, or if we get, and don't send it to us yet, just email me, beresbart@gmail.com, or go through and contact me via the website, www.gospelrevolution.com, and click on contact. If I get enough people who want to be part of this, then we'll do it. And if we don't get enough people, we don't get enough people. Now, once upon a time, I would have manipulated you with all kinds of guilt and shame, but that's just the situation, and I would love to hear from anyone who thinks that they'd like to be part of this push.
Very good. So if you'd like to participate, just get in contact with Don, and he'll take it from there. It certainly would be worth, even if it was books, To Kill a Mockingbird, if we got Gospel Revolution stamped on it.
Well, Mel come up with this idea. It'd be worth it
to have our stamp on it.
Mel come up with this idea, and it was such a – now, and I want to just send out our consolation to Mel and Denise. Now, you hear Mel and Denise when you hear the jingles that go, got to get out the gospel, or what do you think of that? Questions are the lifeblood of the gospel revolution. That's Mel and Denise. They recorded that in the studio in Nashville, and we had a lot of fun putting that together. But right now, they've had a very close death in the family, and so I'd like to send our consolations from the Gospel Revolution to one of our favourite sons, Mel Martin.
Did you put it in the paper? Did you write it down in stone? Did you send a short text message or fax it from your home? Did you put it in a billboard? Make a little sign? Email or do Facebook? Anyway is fine. Gotta get out the gospel.
The reason we feel entirely free to say what we think on this show is because we don't have to answer to advertisers. So we use a value for value model. We give you value, you give us value. If you have received value from this ministry, then we're asking you to consider donating towards our combined success. That would be you and us. This ministry has been an uninterrupted success story for over a quarter of a century because of one and only one reason, you and your donations. Now, when we were reading that earlier about people leaving Christianity and joining the nuns, they're called N-O-N-E-S, or the no affiliations, it would be impossible to say how much influence in that Mike Williams Ministries has had. Certainly one of the largest groups are the Word of Faith movements and fundamental evangelicals. It would be almost impossible to say to what degree Mike Williams Ministries and the Gospel Revolution has had in moving people out of Christianity and into the no affiliations. And the reason it's impossible is because the effect of this went right through mainline Christianity. It went right through non-mainline Christianity. It went through the Hutterite fellowship. It went through the Worldwide Church of God, just like a fire through a bush. And it went through all of these places. Joseph Prince is where he is today because of the gospel that he learned from Mike Williams. Kenneth Copeland is in part where he is today because of what he learned from Michael Williams. Now, some of these people didn't learn a damn thing except only teach enough so that you don't lose your tithes and offerings. But if you want to know where your donations are going, they're going to all of these sort of things. It costs us time, cash, and energy to research, produce, and maintain this earliest grace-based web presence for more than 25 years. We have equipment costs, website costs, a searchable public database complete with over 3,000 hours of free material, 24/7 radio, podcasts, seminar recordings, videos, social media groups, forums, newsletters. Look, and that's all just the beginning. We're here for you, and we want you to just use the facilities we have, and if you feel that there's value in this ministry for you, we'd like to ask you to return value to us. If the Bible is all about Jesus, don't you think that most churches would mention him with at least the same frequency as they mention all of their favorite dogmas and doctrine and all those rules of your particular brand of religion? Tithing, moralism, Old Testament law, abortion, gays, politics, all hail the leader, persecution, the end times, don't forget the bloody rules, God's perfect will for your life, fleeing youthful lusts, rock music, speaking in tongues, the coming kingdom, worldliness and how to escape. But those pesky rules, don't forget them. Heresy, prophecy, soul-winning missions, offerings, wrong doctrine, right doctrine. And don't forget all those bloody rules. Relationships, long hair, short hair, dyed hair, liberalism, greasy grace, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, dispensationalism, and rules, rules, never-ending bloody rules. And Calvinism, Arminianism, a missionary service, Sunday school, swearing and cussing, besetting sins, sexual purity. Oh, and give us some more rules, won't you? False prophets, confession, dress code, mixed swimming, dancing, movies, television, dating. Oh, and did I mention the freaking rules? And so it is, family, that we must leave you. My takeaway from Christianity was, I am God and I love you so much that I created hell just in case you didn't love me back. Or to put it another way, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Jesus.
Jesus who? I can't remember your joke now. Jesus, what do you want?
I want to tell you what I'm going to do to you if you don't open the bloody door. If that sounds like pig slop to you, then you're going to love Phil Britton's book, The Greatest Gospel Truth. Have you noticed we push people's books? We don't even make a dime out of them. But when we find something that's gold, we want to share it with all of our family. Mm-hmm. This is a simple yet powerful expose of how religion has thoroughly corrupted the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace, and how you can distinguish the truth from the lies. It's a free book. Why miss out? Go on. Don't be silly. Go get yours now. Stop listening. Turn off the tape recorder right now and go to www.greatestgospeltruth.com and download it for free. If you'd like to partner with us and not just in money, call our office on
832-318-9339
and speak to us about how you can participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all of the difference for somebody else just like yourself, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Eva, Alabama.
And it is good night from Michael Williams here in Palm Beach County, Florida. Thank you guys once again. We do love you. Hang on for the ride. Sometimes you cattle prod us into action, and sometimes you hang on. It's a good relationship we have. Keep sending in the questions.
And the money. Don't forget the money.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget the money. But keep those questions coming in. Because
questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution.
Good job, Donnie.
We hope you enjoyed today's little mental struggle between us both. But if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Just like I told you last week. Better.
Hey, everyone. This is Mel again.
It's me again, Margaret.
Your heart's desire, your
alive to hear your heartbeat, hear your song. Love's calling.
Gospel Revolution.